Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. Read all of our stories over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. This episode will be recapping the Michigan football team's 42-27 win over Ohio State. Really hard to overstate the value of this win. It's their first win over Ohio State since 2011. It gives them their first Big Ten division title, period. They can snap either against Wisconsin or Iowa while we are recording. That game is still actually going on. They can snap a 17-year drought. Wow, crazy to think about that. Since Michigan's last Big Ten title, they can, with a win next week, they can effectively clinch a spot in the college football playoff. And I think, Steve, we'll both talk about this. Really a special moment in Michigan football history with this victory. Not just because of the droughts and how long it had been, but also the way Michigan won. I mean, I don't know what it looked like on TV, but I was there. I've been at almost all but one of the night games since they started doing them a decade ago. I have been to other rivalry games, other big games, other Michigan-Ohio State games. This blew those other ones out of the water. This was a special, the word I used in my game story, euphoric energy from the crowd, from the players. I could go on and on just about the atmosphere. I thought Michigan actually did a lot of really smart things with this game from an administration standpoint, with the pom-poms, having a DJ at the front of the student section the whole game. I was questioning of it, but it turned out to be definitely the right call. But then also on the field, you know, there's in today's college football, everyone's trying to imitate the best, and you're seeing more and more teams, you know, kind of ditch the old school game planning, focus on passing games, maybe not prioritize defense as much, you know, focus on making sure they have every quarterback whisperer and passing game guru they can find. Michigan with a very vintage Harbaugh victory and a vintage Michigan victory, rushing for 297 yards, allowing just 64 rushing yards on the ground on 30 carries. Sacks played a role in that, but also they eventually stopped the run in the second half. I thought the offensive line played its best game in maybe a generation. But speaking to this season, definitely their best game of the year, bulldozing Ohio State's defensive line, kind of exposing them. We hinted that could be possible in our preview episode, but showing up and just delivering. Hassan Haskins, 5 touchdowns. Aiden Hutchinson, we talked about your best players have to be your best players. Well, he was. He had 3 sacks. That's the single season sacks record. Michigan's defense overall, you know, you could tell much of the game they knew Ohio State was capable of coming back or storming back or expanding its lead when they briefly led. You could tell Michigan was aware of what Ohio State was capable of, and they really took it snap by snap, play by play, limiting the big plays, you know, letting maybe Ohio State get a completion here and there, but not letting that snowball, not letting a big play turn into a huge play. Just really tough, hard-nosed football. It was in the snow. I think I was curious when I saw that it was going to snow if that would help Michigan, who maybe is more Midwest recruiting, maybe a little bit more hard-nosed, maybe a little bit more of a run game team, or would it help Ohio State, who's maybe, you know, we could not have said any more positive things about Ohio State's offensive line on Thursday, and plus Travion Henderson. So I was curious how it looked, but Michigan, they looked like that. They had the mental edge from the jump with that snow. I mean, Ohio State looked rattled. You know, the crowd helps. I do think this was a game where Michigan felt a home field advantage. But at the same time, they played a physical, dominant football game and beat the number two team in the country. And not just beat them, but like really beat them. Capital B, beat them. So lots to unpack here. And obviously now that they are going to play next week, so we'll preview what's ahead. There will be a recruiting episode talking about some of the reactions coming from this weekend, but some of those reactions are still ongoing since recruits are still on campus. But at the same time, Steve, you and I can break down this game. I kind of gave the overview, some of the surface stuff. As I said, hard to overstate really every single thing that I said needed to happen for Michigan to win did. I did a story, six things that have to happen for Michigan to pull off this upset. They showed up in the second half. They won the running battle. They exposed Ohio State's run defense. You know, they held their own enough in the passing game. They brought pressure to Stroud. Ohio State buckled a little bit, and Michigan didn't, leading to a pretty historic victory. Steve, what's sitting on your mind right now as maybe your lasting thought on this game?
I mean, I feel like more people should listen to our podcast, I guess, might be the first thing that I think about. You know, I think everybody was always so focused on CJ Stroud, Ohio State's wide receivers, but I think it's this game is almost always won at the line of scrimmage. And Michigan dominated on both sides of the ball. It was the first time in a long time, too, I think, that we could go back and look and say that.
Yes. So right? They had been outgained by at least 88 yards, they being Michigan. Michigan had been outgained on the ground by at least 88 yards in all eight of its losses to Ohio State. And the average rushing yard difference was 159.0.
Right. So I remember it was like, might have been midway through the fourth quarter or something. I think it was like they kept showing the graphic. I think it was like 221 to 65. And this is the first time these two teams have played in a long time where you're watching the game thinking Michigan's going to win this game unless Ohio State catches a major break. I mean, even the scores, you know, Garrett Wilson had to make a pro catch.
That was unbelievable.
Right. I mean, let's like look back for a second. Almost every explosive play that Ohio State made today was an NFL level effort at some level. Right. I mean, Smith and Jigba with a couple amazing catches.
Yep.
The Wilson touchdown, you know, it was really one of those games. And again, I understand you're watching the game thinking, here we go. There were a couple here we go again type moments, you know, no review on the second Smith and Jigba catch after when Henderson scored or Hutchinson missing the deflection by like a millimeter on that Henderson touchdown. You think, here we go again. But really, I mean, for the majority of the game, it really felt like Michigan was in control. Again, I think at this point, Michigan fans will take any win over Ohio State, but I gotta think the way they won had to have been just extra satisfying for both the staff, the program, but just the fans too. You look at Hassan Haskins, the last touchdown. I mean, the linebackers, I don't even think they really even like attempted just about. If you watch the replay, they barely broke off the ball when the ball was snapped. I mean, Michigan completely beat them up front. And really, again, just I the way I was kind of thinking, you know, you look at Jim Harbaugh, his coaching career, this was, and again, Michigan already ranked in the top five, so they're no slouch, really looked like the Stanford wins over USC back in the day when USC had all the talent in the world, a lower ranked, you know, more just physical Stanford team up front dominated and beat some of those Pete Carroll USC teams. Kind of have always waited for a Harbaugh Michigan team to really do that in a big, big game. And I think today really felt a lot like that. You know, McNamara, game manager, JJ McCarthy made a great throw, like a lot of pieces clicking, but really it was up front on both sides of the ball. Michigan won. And you know, again, like I said, I've been saying that I felt like this is what we've been saying for whenever we first started talking about this game, it's always going to be one up front. And Ohio State's offensive line has been excellent all season long. You know, Petit Frere, pro. I mean, they got probably, I mean, all five of those guys might go pro at some point. You know, and we were waiting for Michigan's interior. Donovan Jeter makes a huge play at a key point in the game. You know, Michigan really stepped up front. And like the other thing you mentioned that was huge too is your best players showing up. Aiden Hutchinson, dominant. Hassan Haskins, again, you're talking about that this will almost Hutchinson's performance may at some point get buried with what Hassan Haskins did today. You know, and that's, you know, it was a thing where it's like, whoever would lead or whoever stood out in a big Michigan win over Ohio State is the kind of guy that's going to get a statue. Not maybe not literally, but like that level of reverence. And I think Hassan Haskins probably entered that Tim Biakabutuka type thing, you know, where like people are always going to remember what he did out there today. And just, again, not just the statistics, but just how he did it and what happened. So game was won up front on both sides. And that's what we expected. I mean, that's what this game always seems to come down to. And it was Michigan's day today, finally, for them.
Yeah, Hassan Haskins, 28 carries, 169 yards, 5 touchdowns, tied a school record for a single game. He now has 18 touchdowns on the season. He has, we've talked in this podcast about his ability to generate first downs. I believe he had 14 today. He now has 100, if you count his touchdowns, on the season, which is just insane. And over 1,200 yards on the season. He's still got, well, now he's got at least 2 games left. And there actually is some truth to the at least part, too. Yeah, hard to say something new about Haskins. I mean, the fact that he has just done basically the same thing every single week, really an incredible season for him. Almost boggles the mind how durable, reliable. Did not have a negative rush play today. He only has 3 all season. I mean, that is just insane for someone who has as many carries as he does. And so, yeah, I don't think they'll build a statue for him, but at the same time,
I wouldn't totally write it off though. You got to remember, dude. I mean, it's like even 2011, Ohio State was 6-7. I mean, this is, you know, what was it? 2003 before that. I mean, I'm not saying they literally would, but you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely. No, I was just getting to that. Like there's gotta be some way. I mean, one, he'll be remembered among fans for generations, but also, yeah, you have to wonder if you know, do they name an award, like a toughness award after him? Do they give him a placard for this season somewhere in Schembechler Hall or the Towsley Museum? Because, you know, Jim Harbaugh said it 2 weeks ago, said he doesn't have the ability just to do so, but he wants to put the team on his back. And for the offense, he did. I mean, I thought Cade McNamara actually had a very nice game. I thought his decision-making, well, he was 18 for 19 on his decision-making, right? You know, there was that one interception, probably another one of those, as you said, Michigan fans were probably thinking, here we go again, type moments, you know, squandering an opportunity to score a touchdown. I think, you know, fans were like, oh, that's going to cost us later, which is probably a natural reaction given the way Ohio State has played in this rivalry lately. But to his credit, I thought he responded really nicely. I thought his 37-yard pass to Cornelius Johnston was maybe the best throw he's had all season. I mean, it was right on the money, caught, you know, Cornelius Johnston, I don't know if it was technically in stride, but it was in a spot where Ohio State couldn't get to it and only Johnson could. And yeah, I thought, you know, Cade McNamara, you mentioned JJ McCarthy. I thought they did exactly what they had to do today. You know, they were getting enough push up front. I think you could almost argue they should have run the ball even more with the push they were getting, because, you know, Blake Corum, 6 carries, 87 yards. He was getting his yardage. I mean, it seemed like everyone was moving forward for Michigan's run game. And you know, the defensive side of the ball, Steve, I came away really impressed, about as impressed as you possibly could be with how a pass defense plays against someone who throws for 394 yards. Like, I don't know if that's going to make sense to listeners, but I thought Michigan did a really nice job limiting the big pass plays by, based on the box score, just one pass play. Well, there's one that was 26, one that was 39, nothing else over 25 yards. And a thought that I had during the game, and I don't think I ever actually tweeted it out because I wasn't sure, because I knew Ohio State could strike at any moment. But there's a big difference between getting burned and getting beat. I think Michigan got beat a few times today. I don't think it got burned that many times today. Maybe two or three times. You know, if Ohio State had a quote-unquote big passing play, it was just – it was open. That's what it was. It was the right matchup. You know, I know the linebackers and defensive linemen got caught, you know, covering slot receivers a couple times. You know, it was a mismatch, or it was just a very good play, as you noted. Michigan does not have the speed to keep up with Ohio State's receivers. I don't know how many teams in the country do. I mean, you look at the way Alabama plays in some of these big-time games, they're often high-scoring. You know, maybe Georgia does. That might be the one team that legitimately has the receivers or the defenders to keep up with a receiving core like Ohio State's. But I thought Michigan, and credit to Mike McDonald, did a really nice job of not getting burned. You can give up a first down, you can give up a few, but if that doesn't deter you, if that doesn't prove costly, if it doesn't result in a, you know, a 50-yard touchdown that sucks the life out of the building like many plays did in 2019, then I think you just have to accept that, you know, that's you doing your job. Because C.J. Stroud threw for 394 yards. They only scored 27 points. I think that's really impressive. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I think that's the fewest points Ohio State has scored all season. Certainly the fewest they've scored against Ohio State under Jim Harbaugh, I believe. Now, 2016, they had two overtimes to get to their final score. But really, really impressive performance. I actually thought, you know, some players that have been put through the ringer a little bit, even this season, when the team was doing well, I thought Vincent Gray had a really nice game. I don't know what the numbers say, but I thought he had a nice game. I thought Mike Morris had a nice game. I thought Brad Hawkins, Josh Ross, I don't think Hawkins is a captain, but two senior leaders who maybe have been overlooked over the years really stepped up and made a lot of plays. And I thought the tackling in the run game was really good. Early on, they were getting beat on the ground. But I think Michigan, if there was one thought I had about their ability to stop Ohio State's very good run game, was I think the holes were sometimes there, but I think the tackling was frequently there. I thought that was much improved, you know, after I guess we can call it bad performance against Kenneth Walker. Now, Walker's extremely good, but I thought the tackling was improved on the run defense. Steve, anything else stand out to you about the defensive performance? You know, the big story, of course, is the sacks. But even though the total yardage was there, I thought Michigan had a really impressive defensive performance in terms of making Ohio State work for everything. Their drives took longer. They had to settle for field goals twice. I think it was just twice. And really, the Buckeyes couldn't work quickly like they wanted to, or like what they've done all season.
So Vincent Gray for sure, right? Stepped up in a big way. Gave up the touchdown pass, but like the coverage was perfect on that play. Again, a pro level play by Garrett Wilson, who will be probably drafted in the first round of the NFL draft in April. Pick your poison here. I mean, there was a lot of guys that stepped up. You know, I thought Michigan really, like I said, Donovan Jeter made a couple big plays. You said, like, I thought what was interesting about this game is it really was I'm trying to think of the right way to describe this, a reverse mirror of the Michigan State game. And it was field goals versus touchdowns, except Michigan was the one putting it in the end zone. Michigan defense not, you know, holding Ohio State to a couple key field goals in that game that I thought really may have ended up being the difference. And again, shut down Travion Henderson. But like you said, that's what, like what, for almost, yeah, four, almost 400 yards passing for CJ Stroud. The other, there's two things I want to look at when we rewatch this game. Did they do that too high safety thing? Everyone's been talking about Pat Mahomes in the NFL, you know, they have to adjust because teams are playing too high safety against them. Did Michigan do something similar here? And then also the other thing I thought was interesting and something I thought I'd see more, Ohio State did not really attack the seam very much in the passing game, whether it be with Ruckert or Henderson somehow. Like they really kept everything to the edge. And that's another, like I think I wrote before post-Maryland, you know, one of my pre-things right off the get-go was that Michigan has played the edge extremely well this year. I feel like it's had to have been a point of emphasis for them. But Ohio State loves to try to get their guys one-on-one. And for the most part, Michigan did a really good job. And even if the first guy, I mean, there were a couple plays. I think Dax Hill got left on an island with Wilson on one play trying to attack at an angle. I mean, you're not going to catch him, or you're not going to make that one-on-one an angle like that. But that second guy was there to wrap up, you know. So that's how you get almost 400 yards passing, but don't really, you know, it's not a dominating passing performance, right? So I feel like they beat Michigan, or Michigan beat Ohio State the way that if they were going to win this game, that's how it would go. You shut down Henderson, because if Ohio State gets the running game going, it opens everything else up for them. They were able to basically limit them to one-on-one balls with their stud receivers or down the field, or getting them balls in the short game and trying to let them make plays. And Michigan tackled well enough to prevent them from making, you know, really any big plays off of missed tackles, you know, because that's what you, again, between Wilson, Smith and Jigba and Olave, more Smith and Jigba and Wilson, Olave's just really a really good route runner, possession receiver type guy. The other two, I feel like, are guys who can, I mean, I think Wilson's the best of the three, but all of them, those two in particular, though, can beat you on one-on-one type situations in the short term and break it for a long play. They weren't able to do that. So again, that's why I said I'd really like on rewatch, we'll see what they did schematically. Did they maybe umbrella a little bit with two safeties deep and then just kind of, you know, basically put the onus on your defenders to, hey, make the tackle. You know, Rod Moore made a couple great tackles. I mean, you want to talk about a kid who's got a bright future now. Couple huge shoestring tackles from Rod Moore, true freshman.
Open field Moore, man. He's good in the open field.
Yes, and a true freshman from Ohio. Ohio State didn't give him a look. Just reeks of a kid who's going to be an all Big Ten, all American type guy at some point. Just based that experience and that positive experience can just go such a long ways. You know, and he did it again today. But the safeties played their – I thought maybe the safeties might have played their best game of the season this year. Have to rewatch, but it did. It felt like, yeah, Ohio State, athletically, they're going to be able – they can – dink and dunk is like the worst that Ohio State can do because they just have athletes. But Michigan made – they tackled incredibly well, much better than they did against Michigan State. Both, like I said, on the edge against the receivers, but with Henderson too. So, yeah. You know, team effort. And like I said, just, I feel like this game played out a lot of the ways I thought that we thought it would. And it was just a matter of could Michigan overcome, you know, what we thought Ohio State could do, even if Michigan played a good game defensively and they were able to.
Yeah. I can't say I predicted this game. I did actually predict 42-27, but I predicted a different team to score 42, but I do think a lot of the things you and I both said, if Michigan wins, this probably happens. Credit to Michigan as well. This is maybe something we'll unpack a little bit after this quick commercial break. But I thought, you know, a lot of teams are trying to be Ohio State, not just in the Big Ten, but in the country in general. A lot of teams are trying to basically imitate the formula. I know some of it's personnel driven, you know, you got to emphasize who your best players are, but But I give Michigan a lot of credit, and I'll give them a lot of credit in just a moment in period for sticking with this plan. But, you know, they have modernized the offense, but they also haven't lost track of what they're comfortable with. I mean, these offensive linemen, you know, you watch them around the facilities. They look like run blocking offensive linemen. They don't look like, you know, the athletic, long limbed pass protecting guys. No, they're mashers. They're maulers. And it hasn't always shown this season, but it has shown in several of Michigan's biggest games, and it certainly showed today. You look at their running backs, I mean, there's not a team in the country that can go 1-2-3 like this with running backs. And you know, we kind of felt that way before the season, but now we're sure. I mean, this is a stacked running back room. And, you know, they have tight ends who love blocking. They have extra offensive linemen come in on plays, and it works. I was amazed. I quipped about it in the first quarter, and by the third quarter, I was genuinely concerned. Does Ohio State not know what Michigan does on third and short? And the answer is they probably did know, but they could not stop Michigan on third and short at all. In the first drive, they had three third and short runs. Two of them broke for double digit yards, and they just kept doing it. You know, second and three, third and three. I mean, it was just bullying football, and that's not a style of football a lot of teams play right now. You know, there's certainly a lot of teams with good run games, including Ohio State. But in terms of what your identity is, how you want to play, I give Michigan a lot of credit for, especially after last offseason, not trying to scrap it and you know, go for broke with what other teams are doing, but instead doing what makes the most sense for them and what they're most comfortable with. We're going to hit a quick break on the other side. Some topics we will discuss: Aiden Hutchinson's Heisman candidacy, Jim Harbaugh's, I guess, job this season, along with taking a peek ahead at what might be in store for the Wolverines. As Jim Harbaugh said, he feels like this is just the beginning for Michigan. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So let's start with the just beginning comments. I think, you know, they are going to play in the Big Ten championship game next week. I haven't checked the score on Iowa, Wisconsin, but it's one of those two teams. They're actually
looks like it might be Iowa. I think Minnesota's okay. Up by 10 in that game. So
okay, all right. And I know it's in the fourth quarter, so won't be a rematch if that is the case. But they are similarly branded teams, in that they have great defenses. Don't think either quarterback is making anyone shake in their boots, but they do have good offensive lines. They can run the football, and Iowa is tricky in a different way than Wisconsin. I think their defense is a little bit more vulnerable, but they love getting turnovers. They love special teams plays that lead to touchdowns. I mean, they're like an upset special team walking, and this year they're 10-2, so there haven't been upsets. But you know, they're going to play in the Big Ten championship game. If they win, I think that there's almost a 100% chance they'll make the college football playoff. My thought would be tentatively 2 or 3 seed facing Cincinnati, probably in the Cotton Bowl. But we can talk about the matchups later. Steve, you have watched a lot of college football. I have watched a lot of college football. After today's game, and maybe you can If there's other games to reference, feel free. What is, I mean, this team can win a national title. Am I wrong for saying that? I mean, this is, I think that's absolutely on the table after this game. I don't think it was something that anyone was really thinking about before this game, because it just felt like the triumvant of Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State looked a little untouchable. I think right now it's really hard to argue that Michigan, I mean, they might be number two in the college football playoff rankings. I know Cincinnati's having a fantastic season, but my oh my, I mean, this is a team that as good as any in the country as far as chances of winning a national title. What are your thoughts there?
So the way, again, the way they won, best case scenario, right? Probably bumps them to two. I think you, I mean, if you're Michigan, you want to stay in that 2-3 because you'll probably get Cincinnati. I think Auburn's about to blow it against Alabama. We'll see what happens in the SEC title game. But no, I mean, absolutely. If there was a year to do it, you know, I think Georgia looks really, Georgia's defense has been amazing. But, you know, if there was a year for Michigan to come in and do something like, I mean, it's kind of crazy that we're even discussing Michigan in a legit national championship picture here, but we're there. The way they won the line of scrimmage today and defensively, the scheme, I mean, everything. I mean, Michigan, they're obviously a contender. They're going to be a, regardless, I don't know if it doesn't look like Wisconsin's going to come back. I don't have the game on in front of me right now, but either way, I suspect they'll be a significant favorite in next week's game in Indianapolis. But yeah, no, I mean, turnover-ish free, you know, McNamara with the interception, but you know, they've played mostly mistake-free. I mean, this really most Harbaugh team, right, that he's had. And I think we can officially cement that now based on their performance today. I think we waited for today. And again, when we say Harbaugh team, this just feels like the teams he built at Stanford, the teams.
Gritty, tough, grind it out.
Yes.
Do not give a bleep about how hard it is, how cold it is, how difficult it is.
And mistake
free. And they want to go to practice and work. That is the one thing. I cannot emphasize that enough. When Harbaugh talks about this team, every once in a while he'll drop in, and they don't have to be talked into it. You know, he'll drop in one of those lines. He did not do that the other years. You want to talk about where this team is different? That is different. He did not used to say that. He's got a team that likes going to work and doesn't have to be talked into working as hard. Because that's how he was as a player.
Right.
He was even though he's a quarterback, and even though he, you know, being 6'3" helps and everything, he was if he could have been a fullback, he would have been a fullback.
By the way, it is official. Michigan will play Iowa for the Big Ten championship. Wisconsin lost to Minnesota, which
feel like Iowa
better matchup for Michigan than Wisconsin. I feel like Allen just, I'm actually pretty surprised that Wisconsin did not beat Minnesota, honestly.
Well, Wisconsin's defense had looked really good lately.
Right.
Yeah. Iowa. My only thing is I think that they have a little bit of that Michigan State in them.
Sure.
They'll just find a way to, and this isn't a knock on either program. I think they're both very good, but they'll find a way to pull a rabbit out of their hat a little bit in games where perhaps you thought the other team was the better football team on the field.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, Indianapolis, you know, you can squash that narrative now too, by the way. You can squash the third place in the Big Ten East stuff. You know, it's like a lot for Michigan fans to be able to tell people to shut up about now. You know, but yeah, I think Michigan, probably Iowa, better matchup. But yeah, that's why I said, like, you know, my biggest thing was while watching this game, as I said, was really just it looked like what we thought a Michigan team would look like under Jim Harbaugh. And that's not to say that some of these other teams in the past haven't been really good teams. You know, we talk about 16, could argue that game got Michigan, you know, just an inch away from winning that game, going to the playoff. But I guess it's one that you watch a game, whether you're in the stands or in the press box or at home. And it feels like you talk about like the juju of the game, you know, like just that vibe, the feel. And this game just felt like Michigan was in control. And I think, again, credit, major credit to the players, but also I think this was really a big coaching win too.
Yes.
And then I think that starts from the top down. And like you said, and you've been on this all year, is that Harbaugh, I think, really, not even from the coaching staff standpoint, but also maybe just some of the turnover in the locker room was a thing that we talked about, and really just feels like, and again, it's easy to sit here now and say it was the right move, or these moves made a difference.
Right.
But it just felt like Michigan had a better shot. I mean, you're talking about, they blew a 16 point lead away from being undefeated right now. And probably, well, I mean, maybe Georgia would still be the number one team in the country, but those two teams would be far and away number one and number two.
Yeah, it wouldn't be Georgia, right? In the field. It would be Georgia, Michigan.
Right. And so, it is. I think this from the top down looked like a game that Michigan, they had control from the get-go. You look at, they score on the first drive, and I think I'm sure a lot of people, scripted drive felt a lot like, I always remember, it feels like Michigan State would always score a touchdown the first drive, take the lead. It felt like a scripted thing, but I think Michigan did
in 2019.
A couple times against Ohio State, right? Same thing. So you're watching the game, you think, okay, yep, scripted drive, score, let's see how they react. But you get like midway through the second quarter, and Michigan, it just looked like Michigan was the better team. Ohio State was having to make big time plays just to keep the chains moving, which they're going to make because they have the guys they have. But yeah, no, I mean, this is coming of age type thing, for the staff, and really Mike McDonald deserves a ton of credit. I think Sean Nua, really, you talk about a guy that was maligned last year. And you see Mazi Smith played really well again. You talk about a guy who's probably going to be all conference preseason next year. Mazi Smith might be a situation where Michigan's interior will create for their exterior next year, because they have two interior guys now, vets who are playing their best football of their career. So credit to Sean Nua, Steve Klinkscale also. The defensive staff as a whole, you kind of mix it up, bring in a lot of different guys from a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different areas, really brought it together quick. And again, like the other thing too, is like the tempo stuff, right? Like it felt like when Ohio State would move the ball, it was because it was more off of Michigan not doing things than it was Ohio State. It was like they capitalized on that tempo stuff again, and you're like, okay, well, you got to stop that. You got to have guys in and set, but when they actually, it felt like Michigan adjusted in the second half. So just a big win from the top down for sure.
Yeah. I think the question, we both went in different directions. I think the question was, can Michigan win the whole thing? And I'd have to watch a little bit more of Georgia. That's several steps away from today, but you look at the advanced numbers. This is actually going to pivot into the next thing I want to talk about. Michigan was supposed to be very much in this game. All the advanced numbers, I think, projected Ohio State to win by like 2 or 3 points today. Michigan was the top five team in so many different, there's all these different formulas. It probably isn't worth our time to discuss what they all mean or what they all are, but they were number three in Pro Football Focus's grading. They were number four, number five in Football Power Index. They were number four in SP Plus rankings. They were, the Sagarin ratings, I think there were four or five as well. This was supposed to be a team. It's so funny to me that like Michigan was objectively speaking a playoff caliber team, but I don't think, and I'm not speaking for every Michigan fan, but I don't think many Michigan fans were even thinking about the playoffs before today, just because Ohio State not only was better in all of those rankings, but they had really seemed to have Michigan's number. And it's crazy, the psychological component of that. We were joking before the before we hit record that, like, next year when we write a spring practice article, the first response or first comment isn't going to be enough talk, just beat Ohio State. You know, it's going to be something different. I don't even know what they're going to say. They might just be excited. They might not be critical. And so, you know, that's just a small reporter change that will come from this. But Steve, how would you encapsulate the significance of this win? And you don't have to know all the answers for on the recruiting side for now. I imagine recruiting will pick up. But, you know, this was something I was saying a moment ago, or before I guess we hit record, that I think this win is going to let Michigan football fans believe again. Even if they lose next week in the Big Ten championship game, even if they get waxed in the playoffs, not predicting either of those things to happen necessarily, but, you know, it is a possibility. I think beating Ohio State, and this is a credit to Ohio State, I think is going to allow Michigan fans to go into seasons with kind of the unbridled expectations. I think a lot of, you know, even the most optimistic fans this season, I think, understood that beating Ohio State was going to be a different kind of challenge. Well, now it's a challenge that Michigan players have done. It's a challenge that Michigan's coaches have done. And we'll see, you know, what Ohio State looks like next year, but they haven't had to deal with a real, like, genuine bummer season since 2011. And so I think the biggest change is that I think Michigan fans, you know, it's been 22 years since they finished the season in the top five. It's been 17 years since they won the Big Ten title. It's, you know, they won in 2011. I don't know if fans were really holding on to that one because I think it's been 18 years since the rivalry was consistently perceived as even. I think even Michigan fans, whether they'll admit it or not, understand that the 2011 win was kind of an exception. Now, I mean, the way Michigan won today, I don't think anyone's going into next year saying Michigan has no shot. They'll lose by 20 to Ohio State. Maybe Ohio State fans would say that, but I don't think Michigan fans would say that. And frankly, I don't think the national media will necessarily say that either. I expect Michigan, with all the talent they're expected to return, we don't know. With the COVID year, with the transfer portal, with the NFL draft decisions, I could be wrong here, but I kind of expect Michigan to return around 3/4 of its two deep. Please don't hold me to that if that isn't true, but just kind of taking my peek on the roster, they're going to have, I think the passing game will pick up where it left off. The run game, if Haskins leaves, but Corum and Edwards come back, I think they'll be pretty good. I think the offensive line has a chance to be good. You know, defensive end will be one area, and safety, those will be two areas where they're going to have to produce more players. But you've already seen a couple of those players step up, and linebacker, cornerback, two other areas where it seems like they're on the rise. So I expect them to be a top five, preseason top five team next year, regardless of what happens. And I think, unlike maybe some other past seasons, maybe for the first time since 2016, but really the first time since 2004, 2006, I think Michigan fans can go into next season and really believe that a 12-0 season, a Big Ten title is possible. I mean, I'm sure it's always felt a little possible, but I don't know if that makes sense to fans, but I think there was such a, like, monkey on the back and, you know, Michigan fans, all of their excitement was tempered just a little bit because Ohio State was looming at the end. And to Michigan's credit, they pulled it off and pulled it off in such a convincing way that I don't think that there will be that. You mentioned the juju of a game, but I don't think there'll be that juju of the season where you're like, but Ohio State's at the end. You know, we'll see. You know, no one's going to have that sentiment for a little while. Steve, your thoughts on the significance of this win and what it means long term?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The biggest thing for me is I think it's the type of how do you say it? For the younger guys on the team, and I think that's where the euphoria you see the post game, and that was one of the other things about this game. It the explosion after really felt like, you know, it had been forever since Michigan had pulled this off, right? You know, it wasn't I think the post game atmosphere lived up to the in game atmosphere, and I think that's one of those things for some of the younger guys, whether they've had gotten experience, whether they had experience on the field today or didn't, that's one of those residual effects that what can we do to feel like that again? And Michigan's recruited a lot of talented guys, right? Actually, the funny thing, you know, 2020, 2021, incredibly talented recruiting classes. So it's not as if
that are already paying dividends.
Yes.
Not a lot of busts in those classes.
Right. So it's, you know, a lot of guys and a lot of the guys who haven't are guys that we've always heard really good, good things about. I think about a guy like Greg Crippen in the middle on the offensive line, you know, as a guy that, you know, didn't play a ton this year, but as a guy they love, it could be a guy that walk in next year and play some good football for them. You know, just one example, but yeah, I think the biggest value of this is, well, yeah, I'll be on the recruiting trail and we'll be covering the heck out of that or whatever. But really, I think it's in the locker room. You know, you talk about the fans and you're right. I mean, you hope, you know, that Michigan Stadium, always a great atmosphere, but maybe this could be the turning point as far as, just that general consensus. I'd be interesting to ask the players, but like, does having, because I feel like this team, and maybe the last couple of years, you know, it's like they've been almost battling the fan base again versus having that fan base behind them. And what
absolutely
right.
Hold on real quick. There was a quote, cause I asked Aiden Hutchinson and Andrew Stuber after the game when they felt like this kind of turnaround was possible. And Aiden said, I know everyone laughed at us outside of Schembechler Hall. Even I don't want to misquote him, but you know, he basically said anyone not on this team was laughing at us, but we felt like we had the talent. We felt like we had the chemistry and the leadership to turn it around. And I thought what was interesting about that quote is like, yeah, Michigan fans weren't even believing you. You know, no one was. I mean, I think, you know, Steve, you were the most optimistic of anyone who covered Michigan in terms of their potential this season. And you said 9-3. And I don't think one of those 9 wins in your mind was ever going to come against Ohio State. And so, yeah, they don't have to, it's not them against the fans. It's not them against the world anymore. I mean, they have, the fans can trust that they can really buy in on this team.
Yeah. It was a weird way to crap on my 9-3 prediction, but
I was 8-4 and I think
I'm kidding. I know. No, that thought it would, one of them would be Ohio State. But no, that's the dynamic I'm most interested, because I agree with you. I think that, it's a turning point for the fan base for sure. But I think the big, like I said, you talk about what they said coming in the season, rightfully so, we're on the board. We know we have the general pulse of everything. The fan base can only do so much, negative or positive. You know, it's really what goes on inside the program that matters the most. And I think the biggest value out of a game like this really comes down to what these young guys will gain from. Like I said, there's something to be said about experiencing something like this and thinking, okay, what can I do? What do we have to do to feel like this again? Because it's a great feeling. You know, I mean, what Michigan experienced today after the game is something that no Michigan team, you know, I take 11 out of the equation. This is something that a Michigan team hasn't experienced in almost 20 years, right? So I think, like I said, there's enough talent there now. I think this is something that within the locker room that can be built off of. And really, you know, Ohio State's always going to recruit top 5, top 6 classes or whatever. Michigan can get there, you know, but even if they're in a little bit like that 8 to 10, 12 range, you know, I think there's enough talent there where they can, continue to build, you know, and kind of, I don't know, build off of this. But really, again, like I said, I think it starts with who they have in there right now. And for some reason, I keep thinking of Greg Crippen. I don't know why, but I'm just thinking like guys that like that they think are there or can be there that will taste today and say, okay, what can we do to kind of build off of, you know, what I really go back to is I just all season keep going back to the Aiden Hutch, the ring me out, the Aiden Hutchinson thing with the ring me out, the offseason workouts is like, that kind of thing can reverberate throughout a program because now they win this game. These guys know firsthand what Aiden in particular, and probably Hassan Haskins, other guys too, what these guys did and how much work they put in for today. You know, it's like, I think that's where you can really build off of something like this because they really, you saw what the fruits of the labor, you know, really were. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's what's most interesting to me.
Yeah. Some might call. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right that the formula is there now. The recipe is there. And now moving forward, this season isn't over. We're not trying to diminish what's to come, but we also don't. We're talking about this game. I think the fact that it worked really validates the formula, validates the blueprint. You know, Aiden Hutchinson. Now you got Braden McGregor, you know, who's constantly been compared to Aiden Hutchinson as a recruit. It doesn't hurt that they kind of look pretty similar, but you know, suddenly he's looking at what Aiden just did and saying, okay, cool, I got to try that. And it's not just him. You know, there'll be lots of players that are trying to, I mean, think about Blake Corum, think about Hassan Haskins. I think on the offensive line, I think quietly Andrew Stuber's had maybe a first team all Big Ten caliber season. Actually, I'd have to double check, you know, my notes and my numbers, but I think he probably has. And someone else is going to be at offensive tackle for him. And I think when Jim Harbaugh says you have to do this, players aren't going to pout. They're not going to transfer. They're not going to, you know, grumble. They're going to say, okay. I mean, think about how many transfers Michigan has had. I don't think it's actually that many more than another Power 5 team, but it's way more than Ohio State, and it's way more than Alabama, and it's way more than, you know, Oklahoma. I guess Clemson's having some now, but, you know, at those schools, there's so much belief that their team will be back in contention by the time, you know, the redshirt freshman who isn't a starter's name is called. And maybe Michigan needs to win a few more games to get into that category. But I think at least for one off season, there's going to be a lot of faith in the coaches and kind of with the strength and conditioning staff. Think about Michigan basketball. I mean, John Sanderson's been at Michigan for a while, but it wasn't, you know, you didn't start hearing, I mean, you heard a little bit, but you didn't truly start hearing about his magic of Camp Sanderson and how excited players were to stick around town, not train with their high school coaches, not hang out with their friends, but go to Camp Sanderson until he started producing NBA draft picks and until Michigan started hanging banners. So, yeah, I think that's the long way of saying it improves Michigan's culture, but it adds a lot of validity and a lot of credibility to it. One final thought, and we'll do like a couple quick true and false things at the end, but one final thought that I have, I don't know if you have anything to add to this, but I'm very curious about the precedent this is going to set for not just at Michigan, but also college football in general. I don't think, Steve, you or I were certain Jim Harbaugh would be coaching Michigan in 2021. I think we felt like Michigan wasn't going to actually pull the trigger, but you know, I posted a couple polls. The majority of fans, I think, were, if they didn't want Jim Harbaugh gone, they were content with the fact that it was probably time after the 2-4 season last year and the 9-4 relatively subpar season the year before. Michigan, at least publicly, never flinched. They didn't. Jim Harbaugh took a pretty big pay cut, and that's another precedent that's going to be interesting, is I don't think we've ever seen a coach take a 50% pay cut to stay at his current job. But do other coaches start to think about this when they really think that there's an opportunity on the table? And when athletic directors really think that the most recent season isn't indicative of kind of what that coach is capable of. And we saw it worked for Notre Dame too with Brian Kelly, but really you haven't seen too many situations where maybe the majority of fans were ready to move on and the athletic director did not, and it worked out this well. You really haven't seen that a ton. So I'm very curious about the precedent. I mean, credit to Ward Manuel. I think a lot of people were questioning the decision even as recently as October 30th after Michigan's loss to Michigan State. I don't think anyone's questioning it now. Steve, I think you and I are done writing or discussing Jim Harbaugh's seat temperature for a little bit. At least a year, right? It's the world can be cruel in college football, but at the same time, I think a win over Ohio State has alleviated those concerns. They now have two wins as underdogs this season. They have two ranked road wins. They have a top five win. A lot of those, Jim Harbaugh is 0-blank, are now 1-blank or 2-blank or whatever. So, monkey off the back a little bit, but also very fascinated by just how unique Michigan went about this. I don't think every school would do this. And I don't know if Michigan would do this for every coach. I think the fact that Jim Harbaugh was who he is and he has the history that he has at Michigan probably bought him this second chance. And to his credit, he made the most of it. I'm very curious to see if Michigan reassesses his contract, because clearly he did everything he said he felt like he was capable of doing, and he can do a little bit more next week, I should say. But Steve, any thoughts on how Michigan went about this, how Jim Harbaugh went about this? I thought it was a very introspective season or off season for Harbaugh. I mean, he hired coaches that were kind of risky: Sharon Moore, Mike McDonald, George Helo. I mean, Ron Bellamy, those are all position groups that performed really, really well this season. And I think, you know, Harbaugh, he doesn't talk about the changes publicly, but I think he emphasized positivity, emphasized teaching, maybe more so than he had in previous seasons. Not every coach is going to embrace, I guess, the grind, the uphill battles that he had to face this offseason. Your thoughts on that, and as well as Michigan's decision to keep the faith with him?
You know, the thing about last offseason was, like, I don't really feel like – I never felt like there was a situation where Michigan was going to improve their coaching. Like, you see what's going on right now in the coaching landscape, right?
Yeah, true.
Like, I don't – like Michigan and their fan – whatever, like, everyone should be thankful that they stuck with Jim Harbaugh. I'd even say, I'll say it, even if they had lost today, I think you got to be thankful that
definitely
you stayed the course here, right? It's, you know, you see where USC is going, you know, like Ellis, all these schools, like who knows who the hell these guys are going to hire. The pool of the talent pool just seems thinner than it ever has, you know? And the other thing is, I don't know does it feel like Harbaugh performs better when the chips are, because like
hard to disagree with you there. I mean, his best seasons have arguably been 2015, or best coaching jobs, I should say, have arguably been 2015 and this year. And I think at Stanford, I think part of the magic was that he got to be a perpetual underdog. San Francisco
with SC,
eventually they became a big power, but his first year at San Francisco, I think a big part of his success first 2 years was he was building up, he was restoring belief, he was, as you said, the chips were in against him, he was back against the wall, whichever metaphor or analogy you want to use, I do think that is an area where Harbaugh shines a little bit.
And I think he thrives also. And again, this is what we've talked like with his kind of people, and not, he is never. And again, that's where it's always, that's where college, the pros is always interesting with recruiting and, you know, telling every recruit they're the greatest, you know, prospect in history, that type of crap. When you're trying to get a guy to sign with you, you know, he's the kind of guy, it feels like he thrives when he has guys. There are others in college football, you know, like you look at say, but like really the teams that are always at the top. It's like these schools are recruiting so many just elite talents every year that, you know, I've always looked at it like poker, where it's like if it, more often than if you're holding a better hand than the guy across from you, you're not going to win 100% of the time, but you're going to more often than not, you're going to win. With Harbaugh, it feels like it's much more of a, his teams are better when he has his guys, you know, and it, again, that doesn't mean that Michigan shouldn't try to recruit at the highest level possible. It's not what I'm saying, but I just, it feels with the way he always, the way he's coached and what he looks for, it just always feels like, I think those are the types of teams. And ironically enough, that doesn't really explain 15 that well necessarily, because he's a first year coach coming into a program that was not in shambles, but was not in a good spot. But as you look at 19, 18, you know, really, really talented squads, but looking at what they did this year to overhaul everything felt like maybe that was a situation where high amount of talent, but not his optimal situation as far as like everybody on the same page, everybody fighting towards one goal, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we've heard as much behind the scenes or whatever. So, you know, that, yeah, I mean, clear as day that Michigan was right to stay with the ship, which I think, I mean, I don't know, maybe you disagree, Zach. I felt like it was the easy move. I don't think the money was ever like a thing in that situation either. That's the other thing. Another area where I really like Harbaugh, for all the criticisms, a lot of them inaccurate nationally, I really have always felt like he's a guy, for better or worse, he is what he is. You know, the fact that he voluntarily took a pay cut to stay, like to basically the way this played out, I feel like that was something he was really okay with. You know, not something that people or anybody's really, but what did we talk in the preseason? Was it like 36th or something? 36th or 37th highest
for salary?
Yeah, it was somewhere. Remember we talked, it was outside the top 25, which was comical because Michigan has been a top 10 program since he was hired. And again, the whole thing was what they did today. They hadn't beat Ohio State, but this is his what, fifth 10 win season, fourth 10 win season?
Fourth one. Yeah.
Right.
We'll end up being his fourth top 15 finish as well.
Yeah. And again,
Harbaugh will never say this. I think he was tired of hearing about how overpaid he was. You know, I think,
sure.
Wasn't that like a Jay-Z lyric? And someone's going to roast me if I get this wrong.
I'll know.
Would you rather be overpaid or underrated? I swear that was that in there at all?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And I think he's someone that would rather be underrated. And so, yeah, I agree. I don't think the money was ever like, I don't think he doesn't view money the same way. And being an NFL star quarterback for much of his life helps. But still, it's an ego check, right? I mean, that's something I don't think every coach would do. We all know how college football coaches' egos can be at times. And so,
Would you rather be underpaid or overrated? Just for clarity on that one. So
okay, so I was almost.
Oh, basically, no, it's good enough.
Hey, I use that in my life sometimes, not necessarily in my job, but like I'm like, hey, would I rather?
Okay.
It doesn't work, but I'd say I'm neither. But anyways, I'm interested about the precedent with it. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of programs that I think maybe regret firing a coach too soon, we don't need to name any in particular, but I think sometimes the what's happening on the field is working, even if it doesn't show it. But now you're seeing Nebraska having a little bit of faith with Scott Frost. I'm not convinced that Michigan's success didn't play a tiny role in that. Now, Frost hasn't had the success that Jim Harbaugh has had, but in terms of believing that a good team is in there and not just listening to the fans and the media and doing kind of what's going to appease everybody. Curious to see if more teams maybe hang on to a coach an extra year if they think that there's some untapped potential there. Didn't really happen much this year. I mean, Florida and LSU got rid of coaches who've had a lot of success. USC got rid of a coach who's had success in the past. But just something I'm going to think about. All right, finally, a few true-false questions. And I think I know what your answer is going to be for all of these. But true or false, Aiden Hutchinson. Well, let's expand it a little bit. Let's make it a little bit more interesting. Should Aiden Hutchinson be the Heisman Trophy favorite right now? Because I think everyone is kind of in agreement that he should be among that top five or however many go to New York City. He's probably earned that right. Should he be the favorite right now? I know we talked about it a couple weeks ago and kind of dismissed it, but three sacks against Ohio State, helping quiet what CJ Stroud was able to accomplish today. Favorite in your opinion? Would he get your vote?
That's a tough one, man. Didn't see what Kenneth Walker did today against Penn State. Didn't see what Bryce Young did against Auburn. Although I gotta
not be good.
I'm not come on with the Bama quarterback stuff. I mean, five star. I mean, it's like it'd be so easy to be an Alabama quarterback. I don't know if I'd say he's the favorite, but he definitely in my. Hey, how about this though? What about Hassan Haskins? Like. Is he in the conversation? I mean, I would never say.
I think it would be hard. I actually did look it up just because I was like, man, 18 touchdowns, 1,250 yards.
Not there.
But
not even
no,
close.
There's like that's multiple fair. Running backs with like 400 more rushing yards than him.
Sure,
and
sure.
And I actually do have a Haskins question in a moment, but by the way, Bryce Young, I was wrong. He turned in a okay performance today at the end. He was 25 for 51. So at one point he was struggling. Jeez. 317 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. Man. So when I started recording, he was not having a good game, but
it was 10-3. I think when we started recording, right? I don't know. I think Aiden's in the, so like we talked about a few weeks ago, I think I mentioned we talked about Aiden as a Heisman candidate, but I made it clear. My thing is more that I think defensive guys should be getting more consideration. And it wasn't necessarily that Hutchinson should be that guy, but after today's performance, you know, with the three sacks and also getting held about 14 times and it not being called, I think he should, again, maybe see what Will Anderson did today for Alabama against Auburn. But I think those two guys especially, you know, should really get strong consideration to be invited. And I hope we're entering the point where the best, really the true best defensive players in the country are not just getting invited, but are getting a fair shake to win the award. Because I think it's one of those archaic things that defensive guys cannot win that award. You know, I think it's ridiculous. It should not be just like the best quarterback for the best team or the quarterback who had the most impressive stats. You know, I think, you know, guys like Hutchinson, like I said, Will Anderson should get real consideration. So I don't think I'd say he's the favorite, but I think he should get an invite based off of today. That I would say that. I'd feel comfortable with that one.
Yeah, I wonder if this year will be the year that kind of switches it. Was it Felix Hernandez like a decade ago? Now I'm sounding old. Who had a 500 record as a pitcher, but then he like finally like broke through and won in kind of a down year for other pitchers with more wins. And that kind of opened the door to saying, oh, okay, you don't just need 20 wins to win the Cy Young. Like you can, there are other ways to measure it. And I think one thing that will be very interesting is to see how Hutchinson, because Hutchinson, his raw numbers are solid. He doesn't lead the country in sacks. He doesn't lead the country in tackles or tackles for loss. but his PFF like grading numbers, does that start to seep in? Because I think his grading, because PFF's gradings, and I'm sure there's other sites that do snap by snap grades. You know, they track pressures. They track, and I do think he will end up leading the country in pressures after today. But they track pressures. They track things like penalties drawn. You know, is there a way to more holistically evaluate defensive players? Because for a long time, that's kind of what held teams back or defensive players back, is if they, unless they had a bajillion interceptions or bajillion sacks, teams just weren't going to play near them. And so they weren't going to get as many tackles. Like, it was just hard to stand out on the box score week in, week out as a defensive player. And so is this a year that maybe voters, because it's, I mean, you and I don't have votes, but it is media people in a lot of cases. Do they start to maybe embrace some of the advanced statistics on stuff? Do they start to maybe, I don't know, this sounds dumb, but like watch games, you know, watch defensive performances a little bit more? Because I think one thing that might help Hutchinson is that he was well known before the season, and he and people were watching him all year, and they could see his snap by snap production, even if it didn't result in a sack or didn't result in a tackle. You know, what he was able to contribute, kind of like a group of five team making the playoff, you almost need to go into the season a preseason top 10 team to pull it off. I don't know if I would vote for him. I'd really have to think hard, though. I wouldn't rule it out, because I'm with you. I mean, Bryce Young, he's got 3,600 passing yards this year, but I don't know. I mean, how many yards would I throw again?
that's what I'm saying. It is one of those things where it's like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, right? Because he's like,
you don't want to punish him just because
he's there because he's Alabama's quarterback, but you also don't want to punish him because he's Alabama's quarterback. He was a hell of a prospect coming out of high school and really has been awesome for them. But at the same time, like you said, you know, how many yards? I could at least throw for half that, I'd think, you know, if I got a full season.
Yeah, I don't know if I actually could, but like, I don't know. Just take like a random mediocre quarterback. Like, they are going to have a good season for Alabama.
Right.
And he deserves some credit, because there are a couple teams who have first year starting quarterbacks that are on playoff regulars who also are five star quarterbacks who did not have the kind of seasons that Young or Stroud had. I mean, it's not a guarantee, but I don't think that should be our mindset as people who are thinking who should win the Heisman. I think it should be more, who was the most impactful player this season? And if it wasn't on defense, because I do think quarterback normally is probably going to be a little bit more impactful. Sometimes it'll be receiver, sometimes it'll be running back. But at the same time, if it is on defense, I don't think there should be some stigma against it. Like, I don't think there should have to be like a comical stat line for someone to make it to New York and potentially win the Heisman Trophy. Okay, next true false. There are two guys who I think are in legitimate contention, and maybe Minnesota's running back or Braylon Allen. Maybe there's a couple more. Should Hassan Haskins be first team all? They have two spots for first team all Big Ten running backs. I think Kenneth Walker's got to have locked up one of those spots. Haskins number two? Is that I feel like that might be a little too easy. True false?
Yes. But would Henderson have 19 touchdowns this year? I think he broke Maurice Claret's record at Ohio State for most touchdowns as a true freshman. Yeah, I mean, Walker gets it just based on his, you know, I mean, obviously he did a lot of great things heading into, but just his, you know, his performance in the Michigan game, very comparable to what Haskins did today, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't even think about it like that, but yeah, right. he had 33 more yards and the same amount of touchdowns.
Right. So same idea. I'm going to say yes for Haskins over Henderson, only because sort of what we just got done talking about with Bama is that, you know, with how much talent he has surrounding him in Ohio, I think Haskins much more valuable to Michigan's success than Henderson. Again, as like I say, as a pro, I think Henderson's the best out of any of them. Like, I think he's the one with the brightest future going forward of any of them. But just, you know, and he did it again today. Like, even second and seven is so much more valuable than second and 11, right? You know, and it's like he's just done it all year. But then he also had the big plays today to kind of go along with that. So, yeah. Oh, I don't want to say begrudgingly, but it's close. I mean, you could be talking about three of the four or five best running backs in the country in that group. You know, you talk about Walker, Haskins, Henderson,
yep.
Right?
Yep,
so it's like, so whoever the Big Ten first team running backs are really could be the first team All-American running backs. You know, it's almost what we're really almost debating here. So, but I would, based off today, because today matters, Henderson was shut down. Haskins wasn't in a big way. I will give the nod to Haskins. Not something I thought I'd be saying going into this game either. Thought Haskins would have some success, but you know, Henderson's had a huge statistical season for them. But what Haskins did today can't be ignored. Again, like this is a Biaka Batuka like performance for him. So
yeah, I agree. I think I'd vote him first team All Big Ten. I think I'd vote Walker Big Ten running back of the year, just because, I mean, Haskins, there have been games where he wasn't like this, but the second half of the season and since Corum went down, I know he came back today, but since he went down, I think, man, he's been incredible and in ways that the box score doesn't even encapsulate. Although I do think he does finish the regular season with more rushing yards and I believe more rushing touchdowns than Henderson. So I guess it wouldn't be like that, this incomprehensible argument. So I think I would vote him first team All Big Ten. I didn't have another true false, actually.
No, it's right. Can I say it's really almost like we'll just give it to Haskins this year because Henderson will 100% be that guy next
true.
Year.
That's right? True. That's true.
If you know, like, I feel like they play that game sometimes. But yeah, I mean, is this – the magnitude of this game can basically magnify how you perform in it. And it matters more to do it today than it does against, you know, it's like they talked about Henderson's best game of the year was against Tulsa, right?
Yeah.
Again, very effective. Like, he's a beast, very effective in other games, but Haskins did today what Henderson did against Tulsa. So I think there's huge value in something like that when it comes to this type of stuff.
Yep. And I guess the summation of that is that what you do against Ohio State and what Ohio State players do against Michigan, whether it's fair or not, that's how you're going to be remembered by these teams. And so Haskins, Hutchinson, you know, you mentioned some other guys who stepped up and made pretty big plays, but I think those two especially, all-time great performances by both of them. Would be curious where this season's going to end up ranking, you know, because there's still a couple games where, I mean, Haskins has a chance for 1,500 yards, chance for 20 touchdowns. I mean, those are incredible seasons. So, you know, and Hutchinson, we'll see what he has in store as well. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. You are not done with these preview recap episodes yet. They are going to play next week against Iowa, 8 p.m. at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. So we'll have a preview episode later on this week. Stay tuned for that. Lots of coverage to come from Ann Arbor today and in advance of Michigan's trip to Indianapolis next week. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next time.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.